our headlines. The Yemeni army making further advances towards liberating oil-rich Ma'rib by capturing yet another strategic region from Saudi-backed militants. Remembering the Algerians killed in a 1961 protest by police in Paris, Algeria's president says France needs to quit a colonialist approach to historical issues. Plus, the fatal stabbing of a conservative MP in London has made the UK government start wondering if its lawmakers are being adequately protected. Thank you for joining us. The Yemeni army says it has made sweeping advances against Saudi-backed forces in two provinces. Army spokesman Yahya Sari says the armed forces have liberated 3,200 square kilometers in Shabwa and Ma'rib. He says the forces have also taken control of five towns in both provinces. The fighting in the northern province of Ma'rib began months ago. The Yemeni army and its allied forces are trying to liberate the area from former regime loyalists who are backed by Saudi Arabia. The army is also fighting to liberate Shabwa in the south, which has oil and gas fields. Earlier we spoke with activist and political commentator Hussein Al-Bukhaiti. He believes Washington's call for the opening of a safe passage for militants exactly at a time when Yemeni forces are inching closer to fully recapturing the province shows just how hypocritical U.S. officials are.
This shows you exactly the amount of hypocrisy that the United States policies in the region. There is a war and blockade against Yemen for the last 7 years. I have never ever heard the United Nations or the U.S. or the U.K. has called Saudi Arabia to halt its war for safe passages, for fuel ship and for medicines and for food to enter Hodeidah port. This shows you that only this type of calls only comes when a Yemeni army actually has liberated area which actually there was a lot of ISIS and Al-Qaeda fighters. And we have seen many statements released by ISIS and Al-Qaeda either in Al-Baida or in Ma'rib that they declared that they are fighting what they call the Houthis. And this show you that the United States actually policy is trying so hard to help Al-Qaeda and ISIS fighters in many areas in Yemen. And on the other hand, we see them, they ignore millions of Yemeni people are starving, a Saudi blockade supported by the United States and UK. That's why I don't think that the Yemeni army will actually stop its fight, because as Sayyid Abdul Malik Al-Houthi, the leader of Ansarullah, has said that the fight will continue till Yemeni army will liberate every corner of Yemen.
Iran's foreign minister has expressed concern about the rise of Daesh and other Takfiri groups in Afghanistan. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark during a meeting with Peter Lonsky, Austria's Secretary General for Foreign Affairs in the Federal Ministry for European and International Affairs. Iran's top diplomat called on the European Union to adopt a more responsible approach towards the rights of displaced Afghan people. The Austrian official condemned the latest terror attack in Afghanistan, adding that Tehran and Vienna have shared concerns about Daesh in the Central Asian country. Tens of Afghans have been killed and many others injured after three blasts rocked a Shia mosque in Afghanistan's southern city of Kandahar. The blasts came just 1 week after a terrorist attack on Shia worshippers in the northern city of Kunduz left at least 50 people dead. Our correspondent Rahmatullah Bahwan has more from Kabul.
Kandahar mosque blast was the deadliest incident since the U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan in August. It was the second week in a row that a Shia mosque came under an attack claimed by a Daesh terrorist group.
I think Daesh attacks must be considered as crimes against humanity. They kill hundreds without being held accountable. The perpetrators are Takfiri terrorist groups and the enemies of Afghanistan and Islam. Taliban, as a new ruler, should maintain security, not only for their officials, but also for citizens.
Recent bomb attacks that targeted our innocent people have no place in Islam. They are misusing Islam's name. the government should take decisive measures and bring those responsible to justice.
Observers see the attacks as part of a larger plot to sow seditions between Muslim brothers in Afghanistan. They add that there are hands-off intelligence agencies and countries behind these divisive plots.
Being defeated in Iraq and Syria, the Daesh terrorist group is taking revenge on Afghan Shias. Also, the U.S. is seeking revenge for its defeat in Afghanistan.
Kandahar attacks comes in line of a series of attacks targeting the unity of Afghan Muslims. Moreover, the most important point about these attacks is that the U.S. is trying to create tensions in the region to involve Iran, India, and Russia in an unwanted war.
The Afghanistan Shia Clerics Council condemned the attack and urged the Taliban government to take action against Daesh and fulfill their promises. Shia clerics called for further unity and solidarity among all Muslims.
The recent daily bomb blasts have caused a wave of shock among Afghans, especially in big cities. Many here say they now expect the Taliban to put an end to the terror attacks by Daesh and establish security in the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Algeria's president has called on France to put aside any colonialist thought when dealing with historical issues related to his country. Abdelmadjid Tebboune made the call as he commemorated France's massacre of Algerian protesters in 1961. Earlier in our news review program, we'll discuss that with our guests. Stick with us. A piece of advice from Algeria's president for French leaders. Paris must put aside any colonialist thought when dealing with historical issues related to his country. In a message marking the 1961 killings of Algerian protesters by Paris police, Abdelmadjid Tebboune says historical issues should be treated with a sense of responsibility. He says massacres and crimes against humanity will remain in collective memory. Emmanuel Macron has become the first French president to recognize the crimes committed that day without, however, offering a formal apology. Some anti-racism groups are welcoming Macron's stance, but say it is not enough. Back in October 1961, Algerians in Paris organized a march against a night curfew. Hundreds are believed to have lost their lives after French police turned on the demonstrators. Now, joining me on this edition of News Review are Macharia Munene. He is a United Nations expert on decolonization, joining us from Nairobi. And also Sayed Mohsen Abbas. He's a journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining this edition of News Review. Now, I want to start with Macharia Munene. Mr. Munene, a word of advice from Algeria's president. Paris must put aside any colonialist thought when dealing with historical issues related to Algeria. Now, my question is, is there any evidence indicating how France is actually holding on to its colonialist thoughts these days? What are the manifestations of such an attitude?
The manifestations would come in general the way people who are not of French extraction sometimes get treated in the place, in France and other places. And also the continuing French attitude towards its colonial peoples, the colonies. You still have that lingering master attitude towards the former colonies, so meaning that France has not quite come off its colonial past. And what happened in 1961 in the massacre, it was simply the French colonial atrocities in the colonies revisiting France itself. What they had been doing somewhere else, they did it in their own capital, in Paris, which was a jolting experience. So the feeling by the president of Algeria is that the French have not quite come of it, the master colonial attitude towards the rest of the world or the former colonies. And that when dealing with Africa, with other countries, they need to reflect the change that is needed for proper relations.
Thank you. Sayed Mohsen Abbas, I want to ask you the same question. In your opinion, what are the manifestations of such an attitude, like colonialist thoughts, in today's France?
I think you can see it in the internal, if you like, treatment of Muslims, for a start. The Islamophobia, I think, is at its most rife in Europe, in France. You can see it in the laws that are being instituted, the way that Muslims are being required to, you know, wear, not wear hijab, as and how the government, you know, desires. And there's this general kind of secular neoliberalism, sort of muscular neoliberalism, which is very much manifested in the persona of even Macron himself. But this is also, of course, rooted in the broader French attitudes to its former colonies, if you like. I mean, Algeria being one of them. France was responsible for 45,000 people being massacred in its very violent, you know, eradication from Algeria. That lives strongly in the memories of Algerians. Of course, in 1960s, when there were simple protests, peaceful protests by Algerians living in France, again they were set upon, and I think hundreds of Algerians were even murdered, arrested, killed at that time as well. So France has this track record of violence and kind of belligerence against Algeria. But of course, behind the scenes, what's really at the root of French frustrations in Africa as a whole, but Algeria as well, is their lack of ability to totally rake resources from that region. Of course, gas and oil, the Total company has a huge interest, something like, I don't know, it's in the millions in terms of what they can gain and prosper from. And I think keeping a hold of that control of sub-Saharan Africa, for instance, also is manifested in their so-called war against terror in that region. They never seem to actually do any successful counter-terrorism, but yet gives them an excuse to have military presence in the region and to create problems. Many people would argue that actually it's these French and Anglo-Zionist forces which keep most of that terrorism going and the conflicts going in Africa, in order for them to have an excuse to go in there and continue a neo-colonialism of sorts. And I think, of course, the stranglehold France still has on much of the finances and the funds of Africa is also a major part of the problem, and their desire to continue to use their ability to strangle African economic interests certainly is still being utilized, and it causes resentment. And I think that's where this Algerian statement is coming, that the respect has to be there. Former colonial powers can't just expect to be ruling the roost. And China emerging in Africa is, of course, a major competition for France, and there's a sort of a desperation to maintain that old economic and sort of psychological hold on Africa, which is slipping.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining this edition of News Review. I appreciate your time and your contribution. I've been talking to Macharia Munene. He is a United Nations expert on decolonization, joining us from Nairobi. And Sayed Mohsen Abbas, he is a journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. Welcome back. Additional security measures could be on the cards for British lawmakers after the fatal stabbing of a parliamentarian days ago. Interior Minister Pritul Patel is hinting at introducing some kind of protection, such as having officers around when lawmakers meet their constituents. Conservative lawmaker David Ames was stabbed to death during a meeting in a church in East London on Friday, becoming the second member of parliament to be killed this way in 5 years. A 25-year-old suspect is now in custody. Police are calling the murder an act of terror, and say the assailant probably acted alone. Russia hitting yet a new all-time high in its coronavirus cases. Healthcare officials are reporting more than 34,000 new COVID infections, the highest since the pandemic began. The figure brings the caseload to nearly 8 million. There have also been 997 deaths, 5 fewer than the daily record high of 1,002 reported Saturday. The total fatalities are now more than 223,000. Officials are blaming a slow vaccination campaign for the steep rise in infections and deaths. The surge has prompted the health ministry to ask retired vaccinated medics to return to hospitals and help deal with the situation. The United States military established its Africa Command 13 years ago. The aim was expanding America's military footprint on the continent. But what will an increased presence of U.S. forces mean for Africa? Hassan Suri reports from South Africa's Cape Town.
From once having no strategic military interest in the continent, within just over a decade, the U.S. now has some 30 military bases scattered across Africa. The Pentagon's African Command, or AFRICOM, project describes itself as designed to promote regional security, stability, and prosperity, while assisting to strengthen security forces of allied nations. But it also admits that AFRICOM will work to advance U.S. national interests on the continent. Some analysts are pointing to a spike in coup attempts in areas that have the largest concentration of U.S. bases. At least seven coups over the past 13 years have reportedly involved troops trained under AFRICOM.
What AFRICOM and this Western militarism is doing is that it is emboldening a military class that sees no benefit or any reason to stay under the command of the Comprador leaders. And some of these Comprador leaders also are not completely wedded to U.S. interests. They will, for instance, entertain the Belt and Road Initiative and the projects that China offers.
A growing rivalry with China is also cited as a reason for the West's military project, aimed at dominating the African continent and exploiting resource-rich nations here. Back in 2008, when AFRICOM was first established, only two African countries showed willingness to host American bases. But now even South Africa, which once led a campaign against American intervention on the continent, has hosted drills with the U.S. The USS Herschel Williams is the first warship permanently assigned to AFRICOM. It is also the second time that it is docking here in Cape Town in less than a year. The expansion of AFRICOM indicates the strategic military ties and influence that the U.S. hopes to establish with South Africa. Hassan Suri, Cape Town.
Venezuela's negotiations with the opposition heading for a possible deadlock, with the government now saying it will not attend the weekend talks in Mexico. That came in reaction to Cape Verde extraditing a close aide to President Nicolas Maduro to the U.S. Caracas accuses Washington of kidnapping diplomatic envoys and says the suspension is in protest against the brutal aggression against its delegate. The government has been holding negotiations with the opposition to resolve a long-running political crisis. Alex Saab was appointed a member of the negotiating team, but he was detained in Cape Verde in 2020 on a U.S. arrest warrant. Saab blames political motives for the money laundering charges against him. Well, that's your war news for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad is a
Listeners Special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 17th, 2021. I'm Atefeh Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio programs. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, the Sunday program, your program, dear listeners. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very useful and important to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service, a high-quality service, to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us in the time of pandemic. Here, I do appreciate those of our dear listeners who have sent us reception reports, including N. Arun Kumar from India, who is one of our regular listeners, Sixten Niman from Finland, who is also one of our regular listeners, and Vlad Vinograd from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners. And Arun Kumar, Sixten Niman, and Vlad Vinograd, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports. And here, I read the names of our dear listeners who have sent us emails from around the world, and later during the program I will read their emails. First of all, we have an email from N. Arun Kumar from India. Toshio Shibata, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email from New Zealand. We have an email from Nicholas Lynch and Jan Thornblom from Sweden. One of our regular listeners has sent us an email, and the last but not the least is an email from Pastorino Gianni from Italy, who is one of our regular listeners. Please stay with us until the end of the program. I will read these great emails from around the world. Welcome back. First of all, we have an email from N. Arun Kumar from India. N. Arun Kumar, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear Sir or Madam at IRIB English Radio, I thought this reception report enclosed to this email might be helpful for you. Unfortunately, there was a lot of noise in the broadcast that I hope it will be fixed very soon. I will be happy if you can please verify the report and send the QSL card with the program guides, pens, stickers to my address. Salam and warm greetings to you and Arun Kumar from India, and many thanks for sending us this email. And of course, thank you for sending us the reception report. Of course, the reception report you sent to IRIB English Radio is very helpful and useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. My colleagues will soon send you an eQSL card, because in the time of pandemic, sending QSL cards, paper QSL cards, and the items you requested, including program guides, patents, stickers, is not possible at the time of pandemic. So you can find the program guide or program schedule in our website at www.parstoday.com/yen. Anyway, it was a pleasure to have you with us in this program. Write to us soon, and Arun Kumar from India, and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And from Japan, we have an email from one of our old and regular listeners, and that is an email from Toshio Shibata from Japan. Toshio Shibata says, "Hello, further to my report 2 weeks ago, I am re-reporting a reception of IRIB World Service. This time, I was able to listen to the broadcast much longer at a better condition. I attached an MP3 recording. I hope you will recognize the voice of a speaking colleague. Could you please send me an eQSL indicating my reception? Thank you in advance for your kind understanding. Best regards." Hello! Warm greetings to you, Toshio Shibata from Japan. I do appreciate you for sending us this email. And of course, my colleagues will soon send you an eQSL for verify your reception. And we received your MP3 recording. Thank you for that, for the MP3 recording. So you listen to the broadcast much longer at a better condition, and it's great. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Toshio Shibata from Japan. And now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails, and this time from New Zealand. Welcome back from New Zealand, from the Southern Hemisphere. We have an email from Nicholas Lynch. Nicholas Lynch from New Zealand says, "Hello, my name is Nicholas Lynch from Christchurch, New Zealand. I would like to present you with a signal report for the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Please find attached a recording I made, broadcast received UTC, that is 419 to 450 here in New Zealand. Signal was strong and clear. Thank you for great programs. Kind regards." Salam and warm greetings to you, Nicholas Lynch, from New Zealand, from Southern Hemisphere. So you are from Christchurch, New Zealand. Thank you for telling us. And I think it's spring in the Southern Hemisphere. We in Iran are located in Northern Hemisphere, and it's for the countries that are located in the Northern Hemisphere, it's autumn. But I think the countries in the Southern Hemisphere, they are experiencing a spring, so the weather is great. As well, in Iran, it's autumn, and the weather is amazing. You can't believe it. We are very happy that our signals are received in Christchurch, New Zealand. That's great. So it seems that you enjoy the programs and the quality of the programs. As you said, the signal was strong and clear, and we had great programs. That's great. Many thanks for sending us this email. Nicholas Lynch from New Zealand, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Wait for an eQSL from IRIB English radio. And also from Sweden, we have an email from Jan Thornblom, who is one of our regular listeners. Jan says, "Dear staff of IRIB English radio, As my hobby is listening to distant radio stations, I was very pleased to hear your station. The signal strength was quite okay, but a little unstable, with some atmospheric noise and interference from a transmitter. Thank you very much for your nice program. I hope you can identify your program through this detail. If you found my report correct, I should be very glad to receive your QSL card, a letter, or an email as a verification that I really have been listening to your nice and interesting station. I am 83 years old. I am living in central part of Malmo, which is a city with about 345,000 inhabitants, located in the province Skåne, in southern part of Sweden, and only 30 kilometers east of the capital city of Denmark, Copenhagen. I hope to hear from you soon. Best greetings. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Jan Thornblom from Sweden, and we send you our warm gratitude for sending us this great email. Thank you for reflecting your views about IRB English radio programs and its quality, and thank you for sharing your information, the place you live. You said you live in central part of Malmo, which is 30 kilometers east of the capital city of Denmark, Copenhagen. That's great. So you mentioned that your hobby is listening to distant radio stations. And that's good. Please tell us which program or programs in IRB English Radio you like the best. Because you said you enjoy the programs and you found them interesting. So tell us your opinion about these programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And you had some trouble with an atmospheric noise, as you said, with the interference from transmitter. We will inform our technicians and engineers about the problems you mentioned. So please tell us more about you know, these problems in the near future, if there was any problem, and then we can fix it. Write to us soon, Jan Thornblom from Sweden. And we're looking forward from hearing from you. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Wait for one of them. And now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Italy. Welcome back. This email is from Italy, from Pastorino Gianni. Pastorino Gianni is one of our regular listeners, but we haven't heard from him for a long time. Pastorino says, greetings from Andorra, Italy. I am receiving with great pleasure your programs. I would be happy to receive your QSL card. Thank you in advance and best regards. Ciao, salam. Greetings to you, Pastorino Gianni from Italy. Thank you for writing to us. Yes, we haven't heard from you for a long time. Write to us soon. And wait for an EQSL card, because sending paper QSL cards in the time of pandemic is not possible. So you have received different programs from IRB English Radio. Please let this relationship continue. Write to us soon and tell us your views about the programs you had from IRIB English Radio. Thank you. wishing you all the best in life, of course, wishing you safety and health in the time of pandemic, we wrap up this week's edition of Listen to the Special. Please keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
flood of guns from the United States into Mexico is helping to sustain much of the crime, violence, and corruption, driving thousands of Mexicans to seek a better life north of the border. We have prepared for you an article written jointly by Robert Reich and Edward Helmore. The piece is titled, American Guns Are Flooding into Mexico and Wreaking Havoc. The article has been taken from the British newspaper The Guardian. Even as Republican members of U.S. Congress accuse President Joe Biden of failing to secure the nation's southern border, Mexico is facing a growing problem of securing its northern border. Guns from the United States are pouring into Mexico, arming violent drug gangs. Mexico has tried just about everything to stop the flow of firearms from the north, passing strict gun control laws, imposing stiff penalties on traffickers, and pleading with U.S. authorities to stop the trafficking. But nothing has worked. So now it's doing what any litigious American would do. It's suing. On Wednesday, 4th of August, Mexico announced that it is seeking at least $10 billion in compensation from 11 major U.S. gun manufacturers for the havoc the U.S. guns have wrought south of the border. The lawsuit charges America's gun makers know their products are being trafficked to Mexico and are expressly marketing their weapons to Mexican criminal gangs, designing guns to be easily modified to fire automatically and be readily transferable on the criminal market in Mexico. The deluge of firearms from the United States to Mexico, on average more than 500 every day, is contributing to mayhem there. Killings have become a routine part of the Mexican drug trade. In Mexico's recent midterm election campaign, 30 candidates were gunned down by criminal gangs. In 2019 alone, at least 17,000 homicides in Mexico were linked to trafficked weapons. Yet Mexico's lawsuit is likely to face tough going in the United States, where the easy accessibility of guns is also wreaking havoc, but where gun ownership is considered a constitutional right and gun purchases are skyrocketing. In addition, U.S. gun makers have erected a fortress of legal protections. In 2005, the gun lobby got congressional Republicans to enact the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Firearms Act, banning most lawsuits brought against gun manufacturers from marketing and distributing their products. At a more basic level, American capitalism considers any market to be an opportunity to make a profit. After all, a buck is a buck, or more precisely, 19.98 pesos at today's exchange rate. In the United States, buying and selling are hallmarks of freedom. To prohibit a sale is to intrude on the free market. For another government to bar its consumers from buying American goods is to violate free trade. Alejandro Celorio, a legal advisor to Mexico's foreign ministry, estimates the damage to the Mexican economy caused by traffic guns totals 1.7% to 2% of Mexico's gross domestic product, GDP. What's left unsaid is that Mexico's illicit drug business is also a boon to the Mexican economy, adding billions of dollars each year in foreign sales, mostly to American consumers eager to buy thousands of kilos of methamphetamines, heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl each year. Freedom of contract, it's called. We sell them guns that kill them, they sell us drugs that kill us. But this isn't trading goods, it's trading bads. There's death on both sides. The merchants of such death, American gun makers like Glock, Smith & Wesson, Beretta USA, Barrett, Century International Arms and Colt, Mexican producers of methamphetamines, heroin and fentanyl, and the wholesalers and traffickers connecting buyers with sellers on both sides of the border are making piles of money. Free market ideologues will argue that as long as everyone is getting what they want, these trades are efficient. Yet vast numbers of people are dying. The U.S. Republicans who protect gun manufacturers and who are criticizing President Joe Biden for failing to secure the southern border from migrants desperate to come to the United States should take note of this tragic irony. The flood of guns from the United States into Mexico is helping to sustain much of the crime, violence, and corruption, driving thousands of Mexicans to seek a better life north of the border in the United States. It's also enabling the flow of dangerous drugs from Mexico across the border that are killing hundreds of thousands of Americans, many in states and congressional districts represented by those same Republicans. Guns, dangerous drugs, and desperate migrants are inextricably connected. The answer to solving one of these problems lies in responding to all three. Moreover, gun sales, which spiked sharply during the early months of the coronavirus pandemic, have continued to increase in the United States, with first-time buyers making up more than one-fifth of Americans who purchase guns. The development will frustrate and disappoint gun control advocates who point out the huge number of firearms already circulating in American society, as well as a seemingly never-ending cycle of mass shootings. Study by the General Social Survey, a public opinion poll conducted by a research center at the University of Chicago, 39% of American households own guns, up from 32% in 2016. Separately, research data compiled by the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check System, or NICS, background checks that topped 1 million a week in March of 2020, the highest since the government began tracking them in 1998, and continued with 1 week in April this year recording a record 1.2 million checks. Background checks are seen as a reliable metric to track gun sales. A third data study, compiled by Northeastern University and the Harvard Injury Control Research Center and seen by the New York Times, shows that 6.5% of American adults, or 17 million people in the United States, have purchased guns in the past year, up from 5.3% in 2019. Of those, almost one-fifth who bought guns last year were first-time gun owners, of whom half were women, a fifth were black, and a fifth were Hispanic. In 2021, gun owners overall were 63% male, 73% were white, 10% were black, and 12% were Hispanic. Separately, the Thrace, a nonpartisan group that tracks gun sales, estimates that 2.3 million guns were purchased in January of this year alone. The group said sales, which had remained largely flat for the duration of the Trump presidency, jumped 64% in 2020. Still, the increases are relatively small compared to the 400 million guns estimated to already be in circulation, including at least 4 million AR-15s, commonly described as assault rifles. South Los Angeles City Council representative Marquise Harris-Dawson told the New York Times, "Americans are in an arms race with themselves," adding, "There was just as much a run on guns as on detergents and cleaners in the beginning of the pandemic." Increased gun sales comes as Texas recently became the 20th state to pass legislation that no longer requires a permit to carry a concealed handgun. At the same time, a rash of mass shootings, often involving AR-15 weapons, have dominated headlines. According to the Gun Violence Archive, 67 mass shootings have taken place in May of this year. The most recent occurred when a gunman opened fire in Miami, Florida, killing two people and injuring 20 others. Authorities in Texas said recently they had arrested a man accused of plotting to carry out a mass shooting at a Walmart store, and a search of the suspect's home turned up firearms, ammunition, and materials officials described as radical ideology paraphernalia. Still, researchers are wary of connecting increased gun ownership with gun violence. The FBI reported a 25% rise in homicides last year that has continued into this, with an 18% increase over the first 3 months of 2021 across 37 cities, including rises of 36% in the city of Los Angeles and 23% in New York City. But criminologist Richard Rosenfeld at the University of Missouri told the New York Times that the focus on gun numbers is misplaced. Richard Rosenfeld said, "The critical issue is not simply the increase in the supply of guns, but in the nature of the weaponry that's being used in violent crime. And that has really changed."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies: shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina wa maulana Abil Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. There are some pretty fascinating and amazing traditions that we have, and many of them were advices given from one imam to the other. And if these traditions are true, and you know, all the hadith studies and all the, you know, things that have to go around them, for example the proving of the sanad and everything else is true, that particular advice from one imam to the other shows the importance of that particular advice. Because one ma'asum, one infallible individual, is telling another infallible individual about a particular act that must be done. Obviously, it's not for that individual, but it is for us. The importance of that act is shown to us as the followers of these individuals who are ma'asum, who are infallible. One such advice is given from Imam Sajjad alayhi salam to his son Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. Obviously, therefore, it is narrated to us by Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. The Imam alayhi salam narrates that when his father Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was approaching death, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam hugged Imam Baqir alayhi salam and brought him close to his chest and said to him, "O my son, I am advising you of the same thing that my father advised me." So Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam advised Imam Sajjad alayhi salam this in his